You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. I'm Matt Lusty, filling in for Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. On the left is Sasha Lux Morgan from the Young Democrats of Utah. Hi, Sasha.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Glad to have you on. And on the right is Eric Rowan from the Utah Young Republicans. Eric, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're happy. I'm going to try and make it so that you two both aren't happy by the end of this because of the issues we're going to be discussing. That's not true, but I do want to start with something national. Anchors at the local Sinclair-owned TV stations read a statement about fake news. I don't know if you all saw this, but it was the statement that they had read nationally, and basically it was saying, fake news is happening. Watch out for fake news. That is a really bad summary of it, but that's where the debate comes in. So let's start with you, Eric. What are your thoughts and what's happening with fake news? What did you feel thinking that, you know, you have this corporation telling their anchors to read that? Do you have any qualms about that?
Well, you know, it's a private-owned company. Is it unfortunate that they're being told this is what you have to read, this is what you have to say? You can spin it one way or the other, but the journalists need to have their journalistic and reporting integrity. And then as viewers have the responsibility to check multiple sources. So you can view and listen to KUTV's remarks or Fox News remarks or CNN remarks and understand them for what they are. Take them in the context for what they are and then go search out multiple sources and say, is what they're saying accurate information? If it's not, we need to hold them accountable. If it is, understand that it is and move on.
I think Sasha's like chomping at the bit right now to jump in on this. Sasha, what's your thought?
So I think the use of the word integrity, journalistic integrity, was a really interesting choice on your part. Because if we're talking about journalistic integrity, having, you know, the corporate head, Sinclair owns 40% of local news stations in the United States. So 40% of local TV channels got to go out and read this message. I don't know if you saw Deadspin's piece that they put together overlaying all of these speeches.
It was not
a good look for Sinclair. From a PR perspective, I would say that it was incredibly stupid.
Absolutely.
And also from a journalistic integrity perspective, I think it undercuts these local journalists themselves, to say nothing of other journalists and people's faith in journalism and our news sources writ large. And I think that right now we need to be encouraging people to have the confidence in their news stations to seek out good information. And if we're just saying, oh, everything is terrible, all information is bad, nobody's going to do the research. They're just going to turn off to political engagement because they don't think that anybody's telling the truth.
Absolutely. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. But you need to look at there's two different sides to saying you can tell your viewers you need to search out other resources. You need to make sure that we're reporting accurate information. But it also falls back on the reporters to accurately report, not cherry pick information and not put up headlines that are clickbaited. And one comes specifically to mind of an article a few months ago about a tree that was removed from the White House grounds. That was one of a historic tree. And the headline read, Melania Trump cuts down X amount of year old tree. And the image that comes to mind is Melania out there with some pickaxe or, you know, axe cutting down this tree.
In really good shoes.
In really great shoes.
Awesome
she looks
shoes.
Fantastic doing it. But, you know, what the article was really about was the fact that this tree was extremely old. And it wasn't steady anymore. But did they report it that way? Not in the headline. And so where's the integrity with that?
So this is – I want to jump in here because this is kind of the question that I have is – and how do you phrase this? By the way, I know all our listeners can hear us. We've got extremely young voices. We are all millennials. You should all know that. This is a millennial bias perspective.
Warning.
But that being said – yeah, now that we put the warning out there – with that being said, I want to jump in here, and I feel like the discussion that is promulgated about fake news dances around a really important issue that is not being really considered on either the right or the left, and that's how am I supposed to, as a citizen, stay informed? I mean, right? Because if I ask either one of you, I say, is there bias in media? I mean, are you both going to tell me no?
No, there absolutely is bias in media.
Sasha, do you agree?
Yeah.
And so, sorry, I know that sounds like me saying, is there bias in media? Well, yeah, there's bias on both sides. I mean, Fox News is incredibly biased, right?
Absolutely.
And you could say the same thing about MSNBC. I'm sure some journalist is going to fact check me somewhere from Fox or MSNBC, and I would be honored if they did that. But the point is how do we get people to be informed in the right way? Sasha, I'm going to let you have the next word on that.
All right. So one of my qualms with the whole Sinclair situation is that they do own such a large media share. There's some estimates that within the next couple of years, they'll own 72% of local news stations. We want people to be seeking out different news sources. We want people to be seeking out multiple streams of information. I'm a liberal. I'm about as blue as they come. And I try at least once a week to sit down and read National Review because I think it's good to check my own biases. If people are primarily getting their information from local news, and local news stations that are owned by Sinclair are being forced to read statements like this or run must-run segments espousing very clearly biased conservative views in support of Donald Trump's administrations and their policies, it becomes a farce of telling people to seek out information. A lot of people get their news from local television. My father gets his news from local television. Yeah. He has it on at work all day, and that's where he gets his information. And so expecting people who work long hours or have kids or other situations to be able to sit down, I don't have kids. I can take the time to read 6 or 7 news sources. But if I'm busy and I just want to catch up on what's going on in the world, I think we owe it to people to try to ensure that this incredibly common, and we as citizens own the airwaves that television is being broadcast on. They lease it from us. That is our television. We need to be making sure that we're having a good system, that we're putting out good media in our ecosystem.
Yeah, so I do think that's fair. I mean, it is hard to go to a consumer and say, hey, look, I know you're busy after you've been working and taking care of family or kids or whatever other obligation you have, but I expect you to sit down and read The Economist for 3 hours, which, plug for The Economist, I love The Economist. But that being said, I'm totally with you on that. We've got a couple minutes left in the segment, so I want to kind of change gears for a minute because we had the largest rally in Utah history with the March for Our Lives rally in Salt Lake City. Wow, it's supposed to be I'm being told 8,000 participants jumped in. That's crazy. That's awesome. People are engaged, but is it awesome? Are they engaging in the right way? Let's start with you, Eric.
It is really awesome to see our students and young individuals out there. As a millennial, I love seeing us millennials get involved as well as the younger generations below us. I wish they were getting involved on the right issues. And this is one that I personally don't think is the right issue to get involved. Does it affect them? Absolutely. But it's not as widespread as we think. And this comes back to what we were just talking about with fake news. The stats that we're using aren't showing that mass murdering in schools is as big of an issue as it is. Is it a travesty? Absolutely. Should it never happen again? I mean, yeah, duh. But I wish these kids were getting involved
other ways. I think you're sort of misrepresenting the views of the kids organizing these march. They never said, this is only about school shootings and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Gun violence is a huge problem in our society. This march was about more than, okay, let's talk about one incident of school shooting, which thankfully are rare. We want them to not exist or be very rare. I was super impressed with the march. I've organized other large marches at the Capitol. It is an insane amount of work. And the fact that these were primarily high schoolers, shout out to the Brighton High Young Dems. We love you. Thank you. they just did an amazing job, a rally with that many participants, that well organized, with that many speakers. Very proud of them.
It was. You bring up a good point. It's about gun reform in general. Now, the school shooting sparked the conversation, and it was really great to see them out there in an organized fashion demonstrating the rights that they're given to have free speech and to protest peacefully. It was extremely impressive.
You know, it's interesting to me is it's so fascinating to see some of these same tactics that have been used for decades in the United States and even before the United States. I mean, God bless America and everything. But, you know, marches, peaceful protests have been happening for so long. And it's fascinating to see that. But the question I have about this, and we're going to get more to this after the break because we're going to take a break up here in a second, but just a little preview for all you listeners, is I want to know, is there an actual discussion happening or are people just saying, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me, and I don't care what the other side says? We're going to get back to that. Hold on. Stay with us for this conversation.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more of our in-house podcasts, visit kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to keep local programming alive on KCPW.
I'm Sasha Lux Morgan, and I'm on the left.
And this is Eric Rohn on the right.
And I'm Matt Lusty in the political middle. And before we left off, we were talking about the March for Our Lives Salt Lake City rally. And I want to throw out a question here. Is a conversation happening? Because I feel like in our society, we have so many competing voices. We have so many people saying, listen to me, this is the way the opinion needs to happen. We're having these online digital discussions happening on social media, on Facebook, in different places. And it doesn't seem to me that people are really listening. And I was having dinner. This is a long intro, so you're welcome, listeners. But I was having dinner with my brother the other day, and one of my brothers, who is a little bit more on the left, and one is more on the right, and the one on the left goes, this is awesome. These students are really starting a discussion. And the other brother on the right says, I don't think they want a discussion. Is that, I wonder about that. Sasha, you look like you've got an inquisitive look on your face from that. What do you think? Do they want a discussion? Is this the right way to have the discussion? Is there a more productive way to have the discussion?
I think it's a discussion that as a nation we've needed to have. And I think that any way that we're engaging young people, people who are about to turn 18 years old in the political process is good by me. This issue has been incredibly activating for young people. They're registering to vote. They're getting involved in campaigns. And I think people are having discussions about it. And I think a lot of the students who organized this rally want discussions, but they don't just want only discussions. They want to see changes that will make their lives more safe and will decrease the amount of gun violence. One thing for me that's a pet issue is that because of the Dickey Amendment, the CDC hasn't been able to do research on gun violence since like 1995. That to me is terrible. Like, why would you say that you can't research something? If you can't research it, you can't come up with good solutions. And so I think there is a discussion softening up on the issue of the Dickey Amendment to allow the CDC to be able to research gun violence again.
Yeah, Eric, jump in.
Yeah, you know, I think the way this conversation is being developed is whether the students that are actually at these rallies want the intention of the discussion, they're bringing it to the forefront of the public's mind. And in that case, they are sparking the discussion amongst family members. You know, the discussion was happening at your dinner table.
Right.
And that's a testament to what they've been able to do. It did open up possibilities for research. What I wish was happening, though, with the students that are getting involved, I wish they were actively researching and understanding the information as it currently stands regarding gun reform and gun issues in general. And I wish they were listening more to what's being said outside of their realms instead of using the typical fight back is, you know, you're not listening to me because I'm just a young person and you don't value my opinion because I am young. And I think we do see a lot of that coming from a millennial and you know, representing a young political party. We do see some of that. But it also has to come from inside. You have to be willing to listen to the criticisms of those outside.
Yeah, I don't think those hoodlums know anything. So no, that's not true. But I mean, I think you do bring up a good point. That discussion was happening at the dinner table, and we were talking about those issues. I guess my larger question is are people ever going to be satisfied? Like, are people going to be satisfied if guns are taken away? If they say, well, okay, that was very polarizing, that statement. Nobody's
coming to take
away the guns.
Yeah, I thought you said you were the
center. No, but I'm saying, are people going to be happy, like, if gun legislation happens? Are those students going to be satisfied? And on the other hand, I mean, we live in a country where if that does happen, are you going to have people on the right that are saying, whoa, wait a minute, right?
You can never please everybody.
No,
you
I think
can never please everybody.
Part of a healthy democracy is people being cranky.
All the time. Yeah.
Because if you're not mad about something, why are you going to get involved? Why are you going to show up to vote? I think it's to find a happy balance, you have to be making people mad a little bit all the time and working towards progress.
We shouldn't have started talking about these younger high school students because now we sound old and we're using words like cranky. Okay, so I want to move on. I want to talk about a citizenship question on the 2020 census. So 17 states are suing the Census Bureau to remove a question that they feel will result in an inaccurate count for everyone living in the United States. So basically what's being asked is they want to know about, place of origin and are you a U.S. citizen, which is interesting to me as we talk about the U.S. Census. I hadn't even thought about that until that became a big issue. So let's start here with Sasha. What's the issue here and how do you feel about it?
The issue here really goes back to a historical question, which is when we had Japanese people in internment camps, a lot of the data that they used to find out where Japanese people were living in the United States was taken from the census. And everybody says, oh, there have been changes in the law. We can't use the data in that way anymore. Frankly, I'm not willing to stake my reputation on that. Laws can be changed. That's kind of how they are. And so I think there's a lot of fear. And even in the absence of that very direct historical threat, people are worried that the census is already expensive to conduct. It's already difficult to conduct. And in some of the preliminary surveys that they've been running, they've seen that with this census question, or with any census question, people, perhaps undocumented, interact with the census takers, and then they leave, they move, they try to get out of contact with them as quickly as possible because they're worried that they are in some way going to be reported to ICE.
Interesting. Eric, jump in.
Yeah, I mean, that's an important point. And I mean, what you're talking about is distrust in how much information the government has on each one of us.
And this kind of sounds like a conservative thing, right?
Right?
I don't want them knowing about my life.
Well, and this isn't a new issue. I mean, back in 1980, then presidential candidate Ronald Reagan issued a statement saying to all Americans, do not answer a majority of the census questions. I mean this isn't a new thing, and in fact this isn't something that Donald Trump is not adding a question onto the census. This question the census has asked this question in some form or another since dating back to the 1800s all the way up to 2000.
Interesting.
Not in the long form census, or
correct.
In the long form census, the American Community Survey.
Correct.
That's true, but not in the which doesn't get sent to
in
the
short
population.
Form. In the short form survey,
it has not been asked since 1950.
I thought this was one where you're just supposed to mark C on all the questions, like I didn't call.
Well, little history lesson. What she's talking about is the difference between the long form and the short form. The long form did not include the question, and that's the change that was made in 1950. But in 1960, the census did ask. Residents of New York City and Puerto Rico, if they were citizens of the nation, and so even in 1960 they were asked that. Then from 1960 until 2000, on the short form, which went to 20% of American citizens or American households, it was asking about citizenship. So this question has existed, but it is a question of, you know, should, as someone who's worked in medical research, we look at questionnaires and self-reported data, and you have to make sure you're asking the right questions that aren't going to scare people off. And I think that, there's some serious concern among states and among mayors and among towns about what effects this is going to have, and it's worth exploring and looking into.
Okay, well, we're going to move on to a different subject, just because I want to ask about a happening that occurred here locally with the LDS Church. So during the LDS General Conference, an apostle addressed the hashtag MeToo movement in a curiously worded way. He said, such non-consensual immorality is against the laws of God. And kind of what we're talking about here is the term non-consensual immorality versus consensual immorality. Now, obviously, there's some religious implications. We want to leave that behind. But what I want to ask is it a sign of social change in the church that an apostle addressed this?
I think it was a sign of social reaction.
Social reaction. Okay, yeah. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, this issue was brought to light, and I think what the church is referring to and what we as a public are referring to are the issue, the MTC rape accusations.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, the former MTC president, yes.
Yeah, and so after those accusations were made and there's been investigations and statements made on it, we now see in the conference that they're now addressing this. It's a reaction. It's a reaction to what's happening.
Okay, Sasha, what are your thoughts?
I think that's fair. I mean, one of the other things that happened during General Conference, I was not there, that I heard about, was that a woman stood up and yelled out over the conference against these accusations of sexual harassment and sexual assault. And sort of related to what we were talking about a little bit earlier with the, does this start a conversation? Is this social change? It's not necessarily change. It's not change unless policies get changed and society changes with it. But it is starting the conversation in all of our communities. And I think all of us, no matter what community we're a part of, need to be taking a really serious look at how we've been sheltering sexual harassers, how we've been sheltering sexual assaulters. And I am actually fairly optimistic that hopefully this will spark a dialogue in the LDS Church and in the MTC program to ensure that everybody's rights and bodily safety are being respected.
No, I hope it does spark some change. I think I was disappointed during the legislative session to see or to hear some accusations that the church was backing a bill that would they were fighting against an issue that would affect their ability to record conversations. I mean, there were some comments made about that. It's an issue that I think we're seeing a little bit change in. I hope to see more, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's ironic about that is the bill that they were trying to think of a good religious term to bring in because I thought it would be clever, but I'm just going to back away from that. But what I would say is that, you know, it's funny that with that bill, this accusation of sexual assault, but that was a recorded conversation, right? Yeah. So the fact that they were having this conversation about not having, or, you know, making it illegal for recorded conversations to be used against ecclesiastical leaders, and then to have this recorded conversation come up, I thought was really interesting. The one thing I would say before we switch gears on this subject is that, you know, I think that the church was trying to be very thoughtful in the way that they address things, which I'm a member of the church and I appreciated that. I appreciated the thoughtfulness because I think as a major player in the community, the church should. I think every religious organization and every nonprofit and every community organization should be thoughtful about how their words and actions interact with other members of the community. How's that for a vanilla statement? That was about as bland as we could get it. Yeah. Okay. All right. I want to move on and talk about something that's less vanilla. I want to talk about medical marijuana. So Governor Herbert says he's going to actively oppose the medical marijuana initiative, but that... So anyway, okay, there's a poll showing that medical marijuana has like 77% approval in Utah. So I'm just going to start this conversation by saying I don't understand why the governor is jumping out in front of this. Like, maybe it's just because I'm younger, but this seems like a weird train to jump in front of. Let's go to Sasha and then Eric. Let's take about 30 seconds each on this one.
All right, sounds good. So, yeah, I mean, with the broad support that medical marijuana holds in Utah, I mean, I'm a neuroscientist. I have read research. I have read research about marijuana. And the fact that this is where Governor Herbert is going to, you know, throw down his last stand is about medical marijuana. It's farcical. He's misrepresenting the issue. It's about helping patients. It's not about making it so that we can be a free-for-all, as he put it, doobie smoking land, which is how you can tell he's a little bit older than us.
No, I actually appreciate that he said doobie smoking land. So for me, that almost gets the support behind
That's
him.
Right.
Anyway, Eric, go ahead.
I wasn't surprised to see that Governor Herbert is opposing this. He's shown to be kind of more of on the socially conservative side. And, you know, playing devil's advocate for him, I don't agree with him personally, but playing devil's advocate, I can understand why a governor would take this stance. It's unknown territory, and he's got to look out for the best interest of all of his citizens of the state. And I understand his reasoning behind this. I personally support medical marijuana. And this is where the little libertarian in me comes out a little bit more, but I also support recreational marijuana, legalizing that as well. I think this is a territory that we need to explore more. I haven't seen any research to show it's that different than alcohol. I was really disappointed to see that it's going to be a state-controlled entity. I don't believe that the state should be controlling these medical marijuana posts. I think it needs to move out of that. I don't think the state should be controlling this.
Okay. Well, I saw Sasha nodding her head, which is the first time I've seen you two nod
your
head.
I hate to disagree with you, but I have to disagree.
Oh, no.
No. It was going to happen eventually.
Okay. Let's take 30 seconds to hear your disagreement, and then we're going to leave with gripes.
No, I said I did agree.
Oh, you agree.
Him.
Oh,
that
we're
was
all
my
agree.
Problem.
Oh, okay. Perfect. I love it when we all agree. So then we're going to jump into gripes anyway, and I'm going to lead off, and my gripe is the Republican State Central Committee. Come on, guys. I mean, really, if you are doing nothing but showing that a group of a few people in this state is trying to control what candidates get elected and therefore derive policy, I just don't get it. Like, I get there are concerns with a signature route. I know that we need to figure out how to get more candidates, good candidates, female candidates, male candidates, everybody that can lead on the ballot. But you guys are just like... killing me. That's my gripe.
I'm going to completely agree with you.
Okay, oh my Eric, gosh. Here we go.
And this is coming from the right, and they're going to eat me alive after this. But I completely agree. There's 51 people that are just putting up such a big fight, spending so much money, bankrupting the party. We have Dave Bateman coming forward, and he's been a good hand in helping to fund this. But now, you know, today we are finding out that he's putting in some stipulations that apparently were written into the original agreement, but he's drawing on those now, and he's using it to influence and control the party. And there's some big – I have big issues with that. This is a problem. A decision was made in the court – and you need to follow that.
All right, Sasha, what's your gripe?
So first I'm going to say I love watching you guys fight it all out over there. Enjoy State Central. Super fun for me.
Well, it normally happens to the Democrats, so we're happy to take it on one time.
But my gripe is actually still census related. I can't believe that we still do a complete enumeration of our population. We have better tools of statistics now than they did back in the day. I think moving to a statistical census model makes a lot more sense, both financially and in terms of actually being able to capture the breadth of the people who live in America.
We're going to have to leave it there. We're going to close. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. Sasha Lux Morgan has represented the left. Eric Rohn has represented the right. And I'm Matt Lusty in the political middle. Our program was produced by Emily Means. Thanks so much for listening.